It was starting on the top of Ayin Aleph and Mid Aleph, four lines down. So the Gemara says that we have Yikadamatni Laha La the Ha de Rapuna Ha. So we have people say that this statement of Rav Huna was actually referenced on the statement of the Tani Rav Yosef, of the Breisa from Rav Yosef. But here, if you remember before in yesterday's daf, it says that Rav Huna says about the Nachrit Afilu Ribito Bekachavim. It was even about taking interest from a non-Jew. So now, the Gemara explains, Im Kesef Talbeta Mi Etani Imach. Right, so that if you lend money to my nation, and then it says Etani Imach. So now, Ami V'Nachri. It's between Jews and non-Jews. Ami Kodem. Then Jews go first. Ani V'Ashir is between an Ani and a or wealthier individual. Ani Kodem. Then the Ani takes precedence. Ani Echov, Ani Yircho, Ani Echov Kodem. But it has to do with the relative or someone closer to you versus the general Ani'im of the city. Then the person who has a relationship with you takes precedence. Ani Yircho, Ani Yircho. The Ani'im in your city versus the Ani'im in other cities. Ani Yircho Kodem. Then the Ani'im of your city go first. So this is a, right, it's a din in tzedaka, of kedimut in tzedaka, that we, first of all, we partly deal with those that are more needy, but also taking into consideration that people in your locale, circle of interaction, have precedence over aniyim in other cities or aniyim in other places. So now, amarmar, ami v'nachri, ami kodem shita. It says, what type of chiddush is this, that if it's between a Jewish ani and a non-Jewish ani, that you would give the Jewish ani first? I mean, why do you have to have a? Why does that limud have to come out of the pasuk? Why isn't it just the obvious? So Amar Rav Nachman Amar Lihuna Lo Nitzruch Chodes is where we're quoting Rav again. Tafilu Nachri Biribit Bul Yisrael Bechinam. Person has now the choice is not an equal choice. It's not an equal or level playing field, because it's not that you are offering an interest-free loan to a Jew and an interest-free loan to a non-Jew. But rather, you can offer an interest-free loan to a Jew and an interest-bearing loan to a non-Jew. Despite that, that's where the chiddush is, that you still go Yisrael Kodem, that the Jewish ani takes precedence over here, despite the fact that, in a sense, you'll be losing money by lending to the Jewish ani. So that's the chiddush. Not that when they're on level playing fields, but even if it's unlevel, you still have to give precedence to the Jewish ani. So, Tanya, I think that's in general, when we have a person can sell to a Jew, even if it's slightly lower price, or slightly different price, as long as that there's not a significant difference in the pricing, then we do, in general, have to offer precedence to selling to a Jew, even when it has to do with when you would lose a little bit of money, as you see here, that the consideration is not all about the absolute price or the absolute profit that's made, but rather, within context, within reasonable context, then we assume that a person should give precedence to the Jew. Tanya, Am Rabbi Yosi, bo re'ei smiot enehem shomalvei ribit. See how blind those that lend with ribit are. Why? Adam kore l'chaviro rasha, yiredi molech chayav. It's an interesting statement of the Gemara. We saw it together in Kiddushin. Person who calls his friend a rasha, over there in the Kiddushin, it's a list of other unpleasant names that a person would call his friend. But here, if a person calls a friend Rasha, is Yoreh Imol Chayav. So Rashi brings a interpretation here, which he says, Vanisha Mati, Rashi says, I heard, Rasha Yoreh Tokh Umanato Shel Chaviro. You're allowed to, if he calls you a Rasha, you're allowed to go after his business, Uma Ik Mizunotav Shel Chaviro, and to reduce his livelihood or his ability to, right, to gain sustenance. And in Kiddushin, Rashi brings, quotes exactly this interpretation. If in Korea Dama Khavir Rasha, you read Malchayav, that's the only interpretation that Rashi writes. Over here, Rashi writes, Vikasha Ve'inai. Over here, Rashi qualifies the statement, says, it doesn't sit well with me. That a Chazal would ever let someone take revenge, retribution on an individual. Right? It's one thing to say, that's what Rashi explains up here. Ragil hitko teitimo, gilu hiko, ukilu bela hargo. That it's a statement that a person, when he feels slighted in the sense that someone calls him a rasha, he takes that offense or that affront as if the person slapped him or hit him. Right? Not that he takes it so personally. When a person says rasha, it's as if he feels that the person hit him or whacked him. So that Rashi says, I can understand. That's the way Rashi interprets it. But he says, I don't understand this other interpretation, which seems to have derivative or sources in the Gaonim, right, the time of the Goanim, that a person is allowed to actually take revenge in this instance and cause the other person monetary damage and prevent him from succeeding financially if the person calls him a rasha. If you look at Tosfos, Tosfos also quotes this katuv b'shtujvot ha-gonoim b'shem rav tzadok ha-gon yoredim al-chayav rashay v'srov shlish tvuato. A person can go and burn up a third of the guy's field if he calls him a rasha. Now this is how Tosfos says, tema godol inayin lo lizit. Tosfos says, how does he get this? Now you could answer, I don't know what Tosfos could be have a tema on two different things. Doesn't get a tema minayin lo zeh that you can go and burn a third of his field. I mean, where did he get that qualification about a third of the field? Or you can say that Tosfos, like Rashi, is a tema on the whole idea that one can take monetary retribution for being called a rasha. Again, it's just interesting that Rashi in Kiddushin does not qualify a statement and brings the interpretation of the Gonim without questioning about the fact that one should be able to take revenge in these instances.
Tosfos just said the tema minayin lo zeh. Might be asking, where does he get that particular limitation?
But right.
Tema
Gadol,
as a
unique
time, he's questioning
a whole notion. I agree with you. I would agree with you on that. Right. But hey, now, what's the comparison? That's like a sidebar there. So people will get called the Rasha, they get very worked up about it. Then, Behemi Beim, now when it comes to Ede, people are Malbi Beribit, that they lend out with Ribit, Hemi Beim Edim, Velavlar, Israel. Here are these people, right? They're willing to have edim and a sofer and a parchment and ink, right? And then they write and sign on it. Israel, that this individual was kofar b'lokei Israel. I mean that they have all this documentation of the fact that they are doing something wrong, that they are violating a mitzvah min haTorah to lend with ribit. So again, the person, when it comes to just be called a name, gets offended. And over here, this person's willing to have documentation for the fact that he's in violation of the Torah. So that's how blind to the fact or to the extent that they're violating the Isra Torah, these people tend to repeat are. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Lazar Omer, Kom Sheishlo Ma'ot Umalveh Otam Shelo B'Ribit. Someone who gives interest-free loans. Alava Katuv Omer. On him the Pasuk says, Kaspo, right, this is in Tehillim Tefav describing a wonderful person, this exemplary person. Over there it says, Kaspo Elonatan Beneshek, right? He gave it, his money did not give with interest. Veshochad al Nakilo Lakach, he did not take any bribery. Oseele Leimot Leolam. Whoever is upstanding and acts in such a manner will never falter. So you see that someone who lends without rebate, right, that is considered to be something of such significance that Hashem promises that he will not falter. So now the reverse can be learned also, which is, if the promise is someone who lends without interest gets that he will not falter, that means that someone who lends with interest will falter, right? That he will lose his monies. And we saw that right earlier with the case of Rav Chama, right? That Rav Chama who rented out his money, in the end he lost all of his money. Right? So here's the classic Gemara's question of Tzedek V'Ra'alo, right? Rasha V'Tovlo. We see that people lend out money, right, without rebate. They give interest-free loans, and they do falter. So the first answer is Amar Rabbi Elazar, Halalu Mitmotetim V'Olim. Halalu Mitmotetim V'Einu Olim. So the first answer is no, they do falter, but they recover. So those that lend out without interest, they falter, but they'll recover from it. Those who lend with interest, when they falter, they won't recover, they won't come back from that falling. Now, Lama Tabit Bugdim Tacharish. Right? Why should those that are rebellious stand and Tacharish and would be silent? Now, Magmar has Kivala, but the Pasuk says Bivala, Rashat Tzadik Mimenu. Right? That when a Rasha swallows the one that is Tzadik Mimenu, that is more righteous than he. So this is the answer given also in the Gemara in Brachot about how do we deal with Tzadik V'Ra'alo V'Rasha V'Tovlo, which is Tzadik M'menu B'Le'ah. A Rasha can only consume someone who is more righteous than he. It's a relative righteousness. Not that he is an absolute objective Tzadik, but someone who is more righteous than he, that the Rasha is able to swallow. Tzadik Gamur Einu B'Le'ah. When it comes to a Tzadik Gamur, then he's not able to be B'Le'ah. So that's the second answer offered over here, that a Tzadik V'Ra'alo means that he's not a Tzadik Gamur. And it's not a total tzadik. Rather, that there are some other issues that we're not aware of. That's why he is suffering over here. But if it wasn't Tzadik Gabor, then it would be unquestionably he would be taken care of by Hashem. So I get two answers offered here about whether it's a temporary setback, is the first answer for Tzadik Ra'alo, and the second answer is that it's only about Tzadik Gamur that said, and therefore this person must not be a Tzadik Gamur. Tanya. Rabbi Omer, Ger Tzadik Gamur Le'inyan Mechira, Ger Tushav Amor Le'inyan Rebit, Enyu Da Mahu. There's two statements here. One is about a Ger Tzadik, a regular Ger, convert, which has a din, a special din by Mechira. He says, I don't understand what Chachamim said by Mechira. A Ger Toshav, now Ger Toshav is, we'll go with Rashi's explanation here, is that he is Mekabel Alav, not to be Oved Avodah Zarah, but he eats Nevelot. We'll call him that. That's Rashi defends that the other Rishonim disagree about what the definition of Ger Toshav is. But based on that, that Ger Toshav, he says that the din of Ger Toshav with relationship to Rebit, any of them who I don't understand it. So now what are these? Ger Tzedek Amar Le'inyan Mechira, I'll explain to you what my question is. Dichtiv. Right here is a person, this is about in Bahar, right? That a person who a financial situation deteriorates and then he has to sell himself to you. And then the psukim continue over there that when the person becomes destitute, not only has to sell himself to you, but he'll have to sell himself to others. Who are the others that are mentioned in the pasuk? And the pasuk is going to list out those others. Chazal learned from those psukim, right, that the juxtaposition of those psukim comes after, right, that you're not allowed to take interest. And that's what the Medrash tells us. Chazal tell us that juxtaposition tells those that lend those that cheat on Shvi'it, right, and those that lend Ribbit, they will have all these negative things. They will lose their land. They'll have to sell away their land. They'll have to do all these other things until they finally have to sell themselves. That when they sell themselves in the end, not only to sell them to Jews, Elul Ger, they have to send to a Ger. Shneimar the Ger, v'lo the Ger Tzedek. Not only to sell himself to a convert, elo the Ger Toshav. To sell himself to a Ger Toshav, shneimar the Ger Toshav. Mishpachat Ger. Then afterwards it says in the pasuk, Mishpachat Ger zeh nachri. They have to sell himself not even to a Ger Toshav, but to a non-Jew. Shomer ol eight Ger. Right. Then it says the eight Ger Mishpachat Ger is in the pasuk. Zeh nimkar le'avodat kochamim atzma. They don't have to sell himself to Avodah Zarah itself. And Rashi comments here, as well as Chazal's explanation there, of Avodim Kochavim Atzma is not literally that he sells himself to the Avodah Zarah, but he has to service the Avodah Zarah. He sells himself to the point where he has to service, he's bringing Mayim Mazon to the Kumrei Avodah Zarah, to the priests of Avodah Zarah. So Amar, Velo Lecha El Leger. So now, the problem that Rabbi Yehuda has here is that it says not only to you, but to a Ger. Shneimar Leger. So that, the suggestion is that the hierarchy of selling oneself, which will get worse and worse, is he sells himself to a Jew, then to a Ger Tzedek, then to a Ger Toshav, then to a Nachri, and then to a Avodah Zarah. But there's a stage in there where he is able to sell himself to a Ger Tzedek. And this is where Rabbi Yehuda has his, Rabbi has his issues, which is the Memar, the Ger Kani Eved Ivri. That indicates that a Ger is able to acquire an Eved Ivri. Pyramini, is that really true? Ein Ger Nikneba Eved Ivri. First of all, a Ger himself cannot be an Eved Ivri. Vein Isha Ger Konim Eved Ivri. And then Isha and Ger may not acquire an Eved Ivri. So that would be the problem here. How could we be darshan the Pasuk that a Ger said they could purchase an Eved Ivri if we have a Brisa that tells us that a Ger is not allowed to purchase an Eved Ivri? Ger lo nikneb Eved Ivri. So now the Brisa explains what's the reasoning behind it. A Ger cannot be acquired as an Eved Ivri because it says in the Parsha B'Shav El Mishpachto, it says that a there it's talking about a Jew purchasing an Eved Ivri, but when he purchases the Eved Ivri, what happens in the Yovel? He has to be Chozer the Mishpachto. And a Ger no longer has Mishpachto to be Chozer. So therefore he's Mufka from the Parsha of Eved Ivri, and therefore he cannot be acquired as an Eved Ivri. Shal Mishpachto B'inan, we need that Bahalekka, and it's not available here. Veini Shav Ger Konim Eved Ivri, what's the reason that a woman and a Ger cannot acquire an Eved Ivri? Isha Lav Orach Aro. By a woman, it's not considered to be proper etiquette or proper behavior here because should we mitiachet with the Eved Ivri? Ger Nami Gemire, by the Gemir, we have a Allah for the Moshe Misinai, Mesorah from Moshe, the Makne Kani, the Lo Makne Lo Kani. Whoever can acquire, right, whoever can be acquired as an Eved Ivri can be the acquirer. And if you cannot be acquired, like we saw before, the Ger cannot be acquired as an Eved Ivri because it says the Shabbat Mechpechto and it fails. Therefore, he himself cannot acquire another as an Eved Ivri. So that's the problem that Rebbe has. He says, how could we explain Ger Tzedek to be the one who's acquiring? How can that be part of the hierarchy of a person selling themselves to a ger tzedek when one cannot, a ger tzedek cannot acquire an ebony vrit? How could that even be in the parsha? So I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Eino Kuneh B'dinok Yisrael, Abba Kuneh B'dinok Inachri. Right, it's true. He cannot be an acquirer, an adon to an ebony vrit, like a Jew would be an adon to an ebony vrit. But right, he can be an owner or a an adon to an ebony vrit, the same way that a non-Jew, a Nachri, can be an owner to an ebony vrit. How's that? Titania. It's a Jew who stayed on after his 6th year as an ebony vrit and became a nirtza, which means that he goes free on the ovel. Or, a nimkar a Nachri had to be sold to a non-Jew as an ebony vrit. Eino oved lo ata ben velo ata bat. He does not require to service the or serve the son and the daughter. Now the daughter is irrelevant. It was just brought because of the bat. Because even with a Jewish adon, you don't have to serve the bat. But on the other hand, by a Jewish adon, right, there it says that he has to serve the owner and his son. Now, by yovel, meaning that by the freedom of the eved who is near tzah, it says ba'avadol yoldam, that he will worship him, he will serve him forever. When it says Babado the Olam, that means until the Olam shall Uvel, but it says Babado, only him. So only the master do you have to serve until the Uvel, but not his children and not his Yoshim. So that's by a Mirtzah. Someone has extended his stay as an Evidim Re, is only obligated to stay as long as the owner is alive. If the owner passes away, then he goes free automatically. Right? And then with the Nechri, the same is true, which is, by we say by Gemara in Kiddushin, when we talked about Evdi, there it says v'chishev im konehu, that when you have to calculate freeing him from the nechri, it says v'chishev im konehu. You have to calculate the exact amount. You can't cheat them. You have to calculate the amount that he's worth and then pay him out to buy him away from the nechri. But it says v'chishev im konehu, the one who bought him. The only person you have to be choshev with is the person who bought him, not his offspring, not his yorshim. There he goes free. So that's what it means. The qualification over here of ger tzedek is that true. A ger tzedek cannot acquire an ebony vrit with the standing of a regular Yisrael, but he could acquire them with the standing of an achri, which means that he's able to acquire them, but they will not pass his yerusha to his children, which is true of Yisrael in the first 6 years of an ebony vrit, that he's able to pass it to his son, not to his daughter. Again, daughter is really not shayach over here. So name of the local Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Let's say that this position that a woman and a ger cannot acquire an ebony vrit is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Tanya, Isha kona et hashefachot, woman may purchase maid servants, veinu kona et avadim, but she may not purchase avadim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer af kona et avadim. Shimon Gamliel says she can even acquire avadim. Rabbi says afilu tamer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So it sounds like from this that right that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, right, that he can be kone avadim, and as our course to our brisa, which just said that she may not be kone avadim. So it sounds like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not the author of that brisa, or cannot fit into this brisa. I says no. You can say Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, but lokasho. It can even be Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's not a question. Kan be eved ivri, kan be eved knani. Over here, one of them is by an eved ivri, one of them is by an eved knani. So which is which? Which would you say? Which is?
I would think that it's less likely that she's able to buy an eved knani.
Right, so I would have thought the same thing, right? But it happens to be just the opposite here in the Gemara. I was asked the question for that reason.
Assuming from the Gemara said before that it's the opposite, but right, logically based on the reason that
right, we would agree. So listen to this amazing thing. Ebed Ivri, Tzniela. An Ebed Ivri conducts himself in a right a modest manner, whereas a Knani is Paritzla. On the other hand, the Ebed Knani is Paritzla, meaning that he's open and does not conduct himself in a modest manner. So, again, this would reinforce what Shaul said, which is that, right, an Eved Ivri is modest, and we don't suspect that there's going to be a problem between them. On the other hand, an Eved Knani, right, who is parutz, we would be suspicious. But the answer is just the opposite. Why? Because the woman knows by an Eved Ivri she'll be willing to have a relationship with him or do something wrong with him. Why? Because she knows he will cover it up afterwards, that he's said no, he won't speak about it, and therefore she's protected and she's safe in that relationship. As opposed to Eved Knani, who will boast about it and will talk about it and will make public such an issue, she's not secure in having a relationship with him. And therefore, by an Eved Ivri, it's not permissible for her to purchase the Eved Ivri, because there she's going to feel gaspa, she's not going to feel a certain amount of fear of having a relationship, because she won't be exposed. Opposed to an Eved Knani, where we allow her to purchase, because there she'll feel a certain reticence in having a relationship with him because of his, right, his pritzut, which would then cause the whole relationship or illicit relationship to be exposed. I said, Allah, the Tani Rabbi Yosef, what are you going to do with that? Right, to stay the position of the limud of Rabbi Yosef. Armaloto lo tarbe kalva, velo teshre bar beira bushbiza. So a woman who's an armaloto, right, a widow, so this is a single woman, lo tarbe kalva, she should not bring up a dog in her house, velo teshre bar beira bushbiza, and a Talmud Chacham should not stay in her right, bed and breakfast, shouldn't stay by her house. Now, bishlama bar beira sneela. So the same reason you could say by a Talmud Chacham, he would say why the woman will feel right less reticent to have a relationship with him, or right, to have feel less encumbered or inhibited having a relationship. Why? Because she knows that the Talmud Chacham is tanua. So if she has a relationship, she knows it'll be covered up. But Ella Kalbo, what about a dog? Why? So she has a relationship with a dog. Came into Misrich Ba. Right, she's going to be afraid. Why? Because a dog, once bestiality has been performed, I don't know the evidence of this, but once bestiality has been performed, the dog is la'ahut acharea. It follows her all the time. So people will know if the dog's always following her around, then obviously she had a relationship with the dog. Mary says, no. Zimri came to Kishadi like umtsa masrich vatra, since he gives her raw meat that she chases after her or she's excited by her. So therefore, she can deflect the criticism or the suspicion by giving him raw meat, and therefore she will not be afraid. Now again, Tosfos points out over here, which we learned together in the Gemara in Kiddushin, that Bnei Yisrael are no nechshadu al mishkab zachar and mishkab behema. That Bnei Yisrael are not nechshad on this, so therefore there's no problem for the Amalotu to have a widow to have a dog, because we do not suspect Jews of having bestiality. It's not part of the right of the areas of the Chazal or Gozer. Nevertheless, Tosfos says that here it's all about a chashash. It's a loan that the problem is mishum lazut svatayim ba'alma. We don't want people to talk about it or make be suspicious of it. So it's a question of maris ayin, not a question of absolute halacha. So in the end, if a widow wants to have the dog, she's permitted to have the dog. In terms of mikar halacha, it's just a suggestion here of the Tanya of Rabbi Yosef that maybe she shouldn't if people are going to become suspicious or question her motives. Right now, that was Ger Tzedek. Ger Tzedek, we just explained why Rabbi had a problem with Ger Tzedek, and we answered up how we can explain Ger Tzedek in the limud of the Gemara. Now, obviously, that wasn't brought down, and it didn't have anything to do with our Gemara until this point. But now, next thing is Ger Toshav. The question of Ger Toshav is about Leinim Rivit Mahi. What's his question? Right, so if your brother, your Jewish brother, becomes poor and he gets necessitates right being helped, you have to give him help. Ger Toshav. Right, you have to give him and the ger v'toshav. You have to give them help. B'chayimach, and they should live with you. Al tich tikach me'ito neshech v'tarbit. You have to take interest from him. V'yareitam elokecha. Fear your God. B'chayach v'chayimach, and he will live with you. So what do you see from the pasuk? V'remihu. What about our mishnah? Labin mehen u'malvin otam ribit b'chayim ger toshav. Our mishnah says explicitly that a ger toshav you may lend to him with interest, right, and you may borrow from him with interest. The pasuk seems to explicitly say otherwise. The pasuk says that if your brother falls on hard times, you have to prop him up. And when you prop him up, when you help him out, you're not allowed to charge him interest. And who's enumerated in the pasuk? There's achicha, ger, v'toshav. So you have a ger toshav in the pasuk where it says explicitly you may not charge him interest. And yet our mishnah says you can charge him interest. So that was Rebbe's problem with this issue. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak miti al tikach mitam. The pasuk changes the wording from the plural to the singular. At first, right, it says when you're achicha matay yadoyimach ve'gzak tabo ger v'toshav, right, and you have all these people achicha ger v'toshav. So then it should say al tikach mi'itam. It should say about all of them, don't take from them, right, interest. But rather it says al tikach mi'ito in the singular form. Don't take from him, right, interest. Ktiv, so mi'israel. And truthfully, grammatically, I don't know if this is such a great deal, because grammatically, right, since they were enumerated separately as subjects in the beginning of the pasuk, al tikach mito references each one of them individually, right? Don't take from him, because it's a singular. The person who falls could be a ger toshav, right, a achicha, or a ger. So then, al tikach mito ribit. Don't take from that individual who falls on hard times. Don't take from him in interest. Nevertheless, if Nachman Yitzchak makes a deal here, that al tikach mi'ito is in the singular, and the singular means there's only one of those in the list that you're required not to take interest from. So that, who's that? So that is the Yisrael. So the requirement not to take interest is limited to the Achicha, the Yisrael. But the Ger Tushav, there you're not required to not take interest from. That's what our Mishnah says, that you're allowed to take interest from a Ger Tushav. Now, Tanur Banan.
He says here, it's an interesting thing. That question, so why did they mention Ger Tushav in the Pasuk? So he brings
that you have to take
Rashi.
Care of him. Yeah, Rashi. He mentions Rashi, says that you have to actually help him out.
Yeah.
Right now, not that you don't have to change him interest, but you can have to help him out. Right? Rashi mentions that. That's the deal here. The mention is that you have to take a Chizaktabo. That you do have to do. The Chizaktabo applies to all of them, that you have to help them out. The interest is only applies to the Jew, that you, the Yisrael, that you're not allowed to charge him interest.
That further underscores your point, because Chizaktabo is also singular.
In singular, right. The whole pasuk has been in the singular to that point, right. That's why I said, I don't know, grammatically, I don't know if it's such a great deal, but it's a limud. Alright, Tam Rabbanan. Al tach tach mi ton neshech v'tabit, aval ata nasil lo areif. You may not charge him interest, but you may be a guarantor. Now the Gemara wants to know, Arev Laman, what type of guarantor can you be, right, that allows you to be a guarantor in some sort of interest loan that you won't be in violation of interest? So Gemara says, Elay Marav Yisrael, if you're going to be a guarantor to a Jew that is lending with rebate to another Jew, Vatana, we already learned, right, Elovrim, Belo Tasei, who violates the Isur of charging interest, Amaveh, Maloveh, Arev, Vaidim, all four of them in violation of the Isur. So if the Arev is in violation of the Yisur, how could you claim that you're permitted to be an Arev to a loan or a situation where a Jew is lending with Rebit? El Anachrei. No, it's a case where it's a non-Jew lending to a Jew with interest. So you can be a guarantor to that loan. You can be a guarantor on behalf of the debtor here for this loan, even though the Anachrei is charging him interest. Somebody says, wait a minute, how can that be? Kevan did the Dein Anachrei, right, in their laws, right, in their Ben Adam l'chaveiro, their laws dictate that such that azil batar arva inu dekashaku minei ribita. So now, in their laws, the way to look at a varev, to look at a guarantor, you have two possibilities of looking at a guarantor. A guarantor can be a backup to a loan, which means that a malveh, a creditor, lends to the debtor. If he's unable to collect from the debtor, he goes after the arev, he goes after the guarantor. Right, that is actually the way we, as Yisrael, we'll see in a second Jew, that's the way we view a guarantor. That he's a backup for the debtor. Now, the way the Nachri, or the way their laws viewed in their time, whatever their code was, whatever their civil code was that the creditor actually went automatically to the guarantor. That he collected his money from the guarantor, and then the obligation was on the guarantor to get it out of the debtor. So that was the way the guarantor worked. I mean, that he didn't even have to approach the debtor. He went directly or straight to the arev. So now, in this case, so in the dinim of the Nachri, in their civil code, if he goes directly after the Arev, then iunu the kashak mine revita. So what happens is actually really two stages to the loan. Because that ends up happening, the way the Nachri in their laws, in their civil code, is the Nachri gives the guarantor the money and says, go ahead, you can lend it to the debtor. So he goes, and then he lends it, he gives the money over to the debtor on the other side. Now the Nachri, when he's collecting, collects directly from the guarantor. He'll collect the principal plus the interest from the guarantor, and then the guarantor has to go collect that from the Yisrael. So basically what the guarantor is doing is collecting the loan and the interest from the Yisrael. I mean, there's two stages to the loan, and in two stages, the Nachri lends to the guarantor, and the guarantor lends to the debtor. Those are two separate transactions, and when he's lending to the debtor and collecting interest, that's as if he himself is collecting interest from the debtor, which is not permitted. So how could he be a guarantor in the case of where a malveh is a Nachri and lending to a debtor is Yisrael? So now, no, Amar Rav Sheshi, Sekiva Lav Ladon B'dinei Yisrael. Now it's a case where it's Nechwe. We said before, it can't be a Jew, because you can't be a guarantor to a Jew lending with interest, you're in violation of the law. So what's the case here? It's a Nechwe who accepts to be done in the Jewish law. Accepts to be done in the Jewish law, then, how does it work in the Jewish law? There. Ibekiva Lav Ladon B'dinei Yisrael. So if he wants to keep Dinei Yisrael, but even Nami Lolish called, then why is he collecting interest at all? If he's going through the Jewish law, then Jewish law says you don't collect interest from a Jew. So why don't we say take the whole package? So I'm a Rav Sheshish. Exactly. Shkibel Abazu, but Shkibel Abazu. He's not obligated to accept the code as a whole. So he agreed to the part of the code, the Jewish code that says, right, guarantor is only a backup collection. But he does not agree to the code that he's won't take interest from a Jew. Now, why does that help? That helps because from the moment the loan is given, who hands the loan to the debtor? The Nachri. The non-Jew gives it directly to the debtor, and the debtor is paying right? The monies plus the interest to the Nachrim. Now, only when the debtor defaults on the loan does it become an obligation of their rate. At the point the debtor defaults on the loan, what is the obligation? Point, meaning it's the principal plus the accrued interest. Whatever interest he owes, plus the Karen, are what he owes to the Nachri now. If he defaults, what is the Nachri going to go after the guarantor for? He's going to go after the guarantor for the full amount, not just the principal. He's going to go after him for the principal plus the interest. So now he goes to the, for instance, let's say he lent 100 shekel to the Jew. Then he owes him 110 back because of the interest. Now the debtor defaults on the loan. How much is the Nachri going to go after the guarantor for? 110. So the guarantor gives 110 to the Nachri. And when he goes back to collect from the debtor, what is he collecting from him? He's collecting from 110. Why is he collecting from 110? Because he owes the debt of 110. Now that becomes the Karen. What he had to expend to cover the debtor was 110. Now when he goes after the debtor, it's a new loan entirely.
As far as his relationship
with the debtor, it's all a principal. There is no interest being charged. He's out 110, and that's what he's going after the debtor for. Nothing to do with interest. That would be permitted, because here he's not charging interest. It's actually creating a new loan, right, that includes the new principal, includes the original principal plus the interest, and that's permitted. So this is a cryptic statement in our Mishnah. Below Yisrael. We can't do it by Yisrael. So Kan Rabbanan. Malvei Yisrael Motav Shel Nachri Mitat Nachri. Israel. Person can lend out the monies of an Achri with the Dat of an Achri, but not with the Dat of Israel. What's the case? It's a very interesting case. Israel shall love a ma'ot min an Achri. A Jew borrowed money from a non-Jew, biribit, with interest. And he finished. The term of the loan's over, and he's ready to pay back the Achri. So instead of paying back the Achri, matzo Israel achem. His friend the Jew finds him and says, listen, instead of giving back the Nachri, I want you to give me the money. Amar tznot, namely, give him to me. Right, and I will give you. So basically, it becomes right a mediator or broker between the Nachri and the new Jew, in the sense that he just doesn't pay back the loan. He keeps the loan outstanding. Instead of repaying the loan, and then by keeping the loan outstanding, he now allows the other person to borrow it that way, in that manner, in that same manner. In that case, it's asur. If the Nachri himself is there, present, and aware, right, the instructions to do such, then it's mutar, then it's allowed. The opposite way, a non-Jew who borrows from Israel with interest, and then he wants to give him back to the Jew. A Jew finds this non-Jew and says, listen, namely, give him to me, mutar. Just like you're paying interest, this Nachri is paying interest to the Jew says, I'll pay interest to the Nachri, that is mutar. Whereas in the other case where the Jew is standing in the middle, it's a problem. Here when the Nachri is in the middle, it actually makes it better. Right? But if they do it in the right, within the purview of the Jew, the Malveh, the original Malveh, and he gives them instructions to do as such, then it's a sur. So now the Gemara says, Bishlama Seifa L'chumra. Right? It makes sense, the Seifa L'chumra. The Reisha came in the Shlichut Nachri. Right, since there's no shikudri, you knew the kashakumin erivito, then he's collecting ribis from him. So what we're about to learn in 1 second in the Gemara is that a Nachri does not have a dinim shlichut. When a Nachri doesn't have a dinim shlichut, it's in both directions. A Jew may not be mishaleach a Nachri, number one. You cannot create a shliach that is a Nachri, you can't create an agent that's a Nachri. And the other way around, that a non-Jew cannot create agency with the Yisrael. That he cannot develop, right? He cannot create such agency with the Yisrael. That means if the Nachri is on either side of the transaction by Shlichut, it doesn't work. So now, again, in the Seifa, in the second half of the Mishnah, what happened over here? The Nachri, in the sense, becomes a Shliach for the Yisrael, right? When it's Hemido Eitzlo. When they come back, and the Jew gives him permission, or tells him to give the monies over to the other Jew. So now what do you have? You have Jew who's creditor, original creditor. You have the debtor who's the Nachri. And he comes and instructs the debtor Nachri to give it over to a debtor Israel. Now, a Jew cannot create Shlichut with a Nachri. So when the Nachri is acting, he's not acting as the agent of the Jew, because he can't create Shlichut, he's acting on his own behalf. That means that really, even when the Jew gives him instructions, the loan is still a two-tier loan. Which is that he lent money to Nachri, and now the Nachri is lending money to a Jew, and that'll be fine, that should be permitted. Why does the price say Asur? We do the Chumrah. That's what we have. It's a Chumrah the Rabbanan, even though there's no Shlichut to Nachri, they're Machmir on him here, that it looks, you know, it doesn't look good. Right, so even the Goy, when the Goy is involved, even though there's no Shlichut, we say don't do such a transaction, even though there's
no Shlichut.
What?
When the Jew's not around, no problem, because then...
Right, it's not his. Then clearly, the Jew, he's acting on his own behalf. Right, he's acting on his own. Right. Then he's acting on his own volition. That's fine. But when the Jew's even involved, it should be mutar min d'oraisa. The rabbi goes there, then it shouldn't be such. But then, if that's the case.
But when the guy transfers the money to the Jew, the Jew's going to pay back to.
No, he pays it to the Nachri, and then the Nachri pays it to the Jew. That's the whole setup here. The setup here is that you pay me like I would have paid. Don't close the loan out. Pay me, and then I'll pay you. Right. So now the problem the Gemara has is, what about the ratio of the brisa? The ratio of the brisa said what? The ratio of the brisa says, okay, if the goy is the creditor and he lent to a Jew, now the Jew goes and gives over to another Jew. Right. If he does it without the goy involved, he's not allowed, because there's clearly the Jew acting on his own volition and lending to another Jew. He can't do that. But if the goy is around, then we say it works. That's fine. Well, why should it be fine? A goy cannot create shlichut. A goy cannot create the ability to give from, right, a Jew A to Jew B. That means, again, that Jew A is acting on his own, right, volition, because the goy can instruct him to be his agent to give it over to the other Yisrael. Right, so now, so when the goy says, give it over to the other Yisrael, the goy's statement's irrelevant, and when he gives it to the other Yisrael, again, he's acting on his own, and there's still a two-tiered loan. So why should it be mutar in the first place? He says, so I'll just read the question again. He says, Bishlama seifa l'chumra, seifa, I understand l'chumra, because they're machmir, that shlichus nachri, even though it doesn't work, we say it does work. Over here, alaresha, gave it to shlichut nachri, iuniu, the kashachu minei revita. Even if the nachri gives him specific instructions, in the end, it's a Jew, that's debtor one collecting from debtor two. And that's not permitted. So I'm Rabbuna Baranoch, Rishmeh Dravacha Brei Davika, Achel, my skin, and what's the case here? Go Darmalei, Heini Chamal, Gabi Kakav, Yid Pater. Says the Jew one, debtor one, put him on the ground, and you're done. You're done, and the other guy will pick him up. So basically, he's discharging the loan from him by him placing it down on the ground. The Gemara says, Yochi, by the Memra. What do I need a Brisa to teach me that? Everybody knows that. The guy says, your loan is over when you put it on the ground. Then, of course, when the next guy picks it up, he's picking up from quote unquote Hefker, he's picking up. Right, nothing to do with Jew 1. Jew 1 is discharged from the loan when he puts it down on the ground. So he has nothing to do with this money anymore. So when Jew 2 comes and picks it up, he's picking up either from Hefker, he's picking up from the Nachri. That was a case here where the Nachri himself actually passes the money. He gets involved physically in the transaction. So it's there instructing him, right? So Shul is looking at me. Of course, what's the question again? If the Nachri is standing there, he's handing it one hand to the next hand, then he already made a kinyan from the Jew to take the money in return, and now he's handing it to the next Jew. The first Jew has no relationship over here. So Ma'al Tema, the Gemara says, now, what I thought, Nachri Gufei, ki avid adat at Yisrael, right, kagamir, v'yohid. This Jew, how did a debtor two come to the Nachri? Debtor two came to the Nachri because debtor one brought him to the Nachri and says, look, I'm returning you the money, but instead of me returning the money, why don't you just let it out to debtor two? So who made the whole transaction possible? Who created it? This Jew who's a broker. So this Jew is a broker over here, right? We would have thought that the Nachri is acting on behest of this Jew, Jew 1. So we would think that the Rabbanan would be gozer in this instance, possibly, that since the Jew is a broker, even though there's no shlichut the Nachri, it looks like he's brokering a deal, and it looks like the Jew is giving to him. So Kamash Malan, that this is mutar. If the Nachri is no seder no ten bayad, if he gets involved physically with the transaction, hands the money from hand to hand, that takes the broker out of the picture. So if you take the broker out of the picture, then we're not even chosheish midrabanan for the Indian of shlichut over here. So now we have other suggestions. Now, so far we have two suggestions to the answer. There is Rav Ona bar Manoach, Mishmei d'Ravacha, Brei d'Mika, that we said, he said that he put it down, the pater, there you might reject it entirely because it says too obvious. But the suggestion now of Rav Papa, which is that he's no seven, no ten b'yad, and the chiddush is that even though he's a broker, the broker is eliminated from the picture by the no seven, no ten b'yad. Now we have Rav Ashi, who's going to make two answers now, two possible answers, which are both going to be rejected. Rav Ashi Amar, here I'm reading H.L.K.U.D. Nachri Yanimil B'Truma. When we say there's no shlichut to an achri, that's only in Shuma. But everywhere else in the Torah, there is shlichut to an achri. My says, Rav Ashi is a big joke. Why? Maishna Shuma to lo. Why can't an achri be a shliach by Shuma? Dichtiv. Atem, gam atem. Right, so when it uses the word gam, right, gam atem, there we say that gam comes to include shlichut. So ma atem b'nei b'rit, just like you have to be Jewish, ashuchem nami b'rit, even the people said you have to be Jews, that's the gam. Since the inclusion of shliach is premised on atem, gam atem, so the extension to shlichut comes from you, so if just like you're a Jew, so too is your mishaleach have to be a Jew. Shlichut t'chol ha-torah kula, nami mitruma gam rinala. How do we know that agency works everywhere else in the Torah? We learn it out from Truma. So if the right paradigm or the binyan av for shlichut is Truma, and in Truma you have that qualification, then that should apply to Kol HaTorah Kula. You won't know any differently, right? Dayol Avobin Adin, Dayot Kinidon. If you can learn everywhere else in the Torah from Truma, then it can't be any better than Truma. If Truma it doesn't work, then it's not going to work Kol HaTorah Kula. So that's the first one. Elat Ravashi Kute, definitely Ravashi's answer. That's a joke over here. Igadam, right? Some that say I'm Ravashi. Arimile Inu the Didan, right? So, right, that means Inu the Didan means that we are unable to make them into shlichim, into the agents. About Anan the Dihu, but when it comes to them making us into agents, Avinu Luhu shliach, we could become a shliach for them. Rather, Ravashi Kutei, right? That Ravashi is a joke. And Maishna Inu the Didan Dulo. Why is it that we aren't able to use them, right, as our agents, right? Dechtev atem gam atem, because by atem gam atem says they're both shluchachem. That also your shliach can work for you. I mean, your agent can work just like you work. So ma atem bnei brit, just like you as the shliach of bnei brit, av shluchachem bnei brit. So too, your agent has to be a bnei brit. So therefore, you cannot create an agent who is not a Jew. Anam didu nami. So the same thing will apply the other way around. Why? Because what's the whole premise over here? Right? Anan the didu. Right? The one who created the shlichut is a bnei brit. Right? So that's the whole premise. Ma tem bnei brit. That's the whole premise for the limud over here is that you are a bnei brit. That means that if they are not a bnei brit, then they can't create shlichut to start with. They can't create it. Elohad Ravashi brute. Ravashi is obviously a joke. Ravina Amar. So Ravina last is the fourth answer. The last answer. Ravina Amar nehid shlichut anachri leitei. Fine, a Nachri does not have Shlichut. Zechia midrabanan itlei. That even though he does not have Shlichut, nevertheless, you can be Zocheh on his behalf, midrabanan, mididahavi a katan. Just like a minor. Why? Katan, lavagavdalei Shlichut. A katan, even though he does not have Shlichut, is unable to create agency, and he cannot be an agent, doesn't create agency. Nevertheless, right? Itlei zechia midrabanan. He has, it means that if someone acquires something on behalf of a katan, the katan is zocheh in that item, but that person can be zocheh on behalf of the katan. So, also over here, it should be the same thing. So, even though the Jew cannot act as a shliach for the nachri, he can act on his behest or on his behalf to be zocheh on behalf of the nachri. So, if that's the case, right, then over here it would clear up the problem. So, over here, if he's acting, the Jew, then with the instruction of the nachri, is accepting, right, the loan. Yeah. Jew A is giving it to Jew B. And he says to Jew B, you take the loan now. When Jew B accepts the loan from Jew A, what the Nachri is saying, he's Zochay on behalf of the Nachri. He's Zochay for the Nachri. Right, so then it's eliminating debtor one. Debtor one's being eliminated from the process, and now it's directly for the Nachri. So that's Ravina's answer. Mar says, lo, it doesn't work. Yisrael atila chal shlichut, akum lo atila chal shlichut. A katan will eventually have agency or be able to create and be a part of agency. So therefore, the Rabbanan instituted tzchiyah when he's a katan. A Nachri will never come to the Paish of Shlichut, so therefore they were not gozer that in such instances, right, there will be a Zechiyah. Or that the reason to give Zechiyah is to, because eventually it'll be a Zechiyah. That's the answer, right? Ravina obviously didn't believe that, but that's the Gemara's answer. Does not agree with Ravina's statement. Now, two important things is, once the Gemara moves to Noseh v'Notem B'Yad, it's an interesting thing. The Gemara shifted for the ratio to Noseh v'Notem B'Yad. Did the Gemara, when it shifted, also shift that for the Seifa? As the Rabbeinu Tam says, yeah, in the end, we don't have to say the Seif is a Chumrah. We can say that the Seif is also Mi'ikar HaDin, because he's no Seif, no Tem B'yad. It's not a Chumrah that we say that that he's not allowed to do it. It's actually Mi'ikar HaDin. Why? Because you have an Achri who borrowed from a Jew, and now he's giving it to another debtor who's a Jew. And then what does the Achri do? He hands it to the Jew, and then the Jew hands it to the other Jew. So now, again, when it's no B'yad, it means that the creditor is handing it directly to the Jew, and it'll be Yosur Mi'ikar HaLacha, it's not a Chumrah anymore. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam learns. Once the Gemara says, Noseh Notem B'yad, you don't need any more Chumrah over here. You know, say Notem B'yad is the case in the Braisa, in both directions. It's Mutar, and it's Asur Mi'ikar HaDin. That's Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hanan will stay with the Pshat of the Gemara. The Gemara only amends the Braisa in the first case. Gemara only amends the Braisa with the Reisha and says, Noseh Notem B'yad. When it comes to the Sefer, they don't amend it and leave it as a Chumrah. They don't set up the case in the Seif as Noseh v'Notem B'yad, and they leave that as simply being a Chumrah midrabanan, that there is no Shlichut. Now, there's a very interesting case here. Just want to read it to you. In the Tosfos, the last Tosfos on the Omud Bet of Ayin Aleph from above, there it's about 2, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom in Tosfos. 5 lines up. It says, Tosfos makes a statement here. Zechlal, there's a general principle. Goshu b'achrayut Yisrael, asur. Anything that a Jew is responsible for is asur. If the non-Jew is responsible for it, then it works. So Tosfos over there is explaining if a Jew gets involved in the middle, or a Nachri gets involved in the middle, then it's permitted if that Jew or Nachri in the middle becomes responsible for the money. If they become responsible for the money, then it's obviously permitted. Why? Because then they are the ones who are really borrowing from the other party, and then there's no relationship between party one and party three. So now, u'b'tshuva achat katev Rabbeinu Tam. It's an interesting tshuva, Rabbeinu Tam. Deheter gomor hu kehai gavno. I'll tell you how you can lend in a way that is mutar. Shishlach Yisrael aloveh, mashkenotav ayidei nachri, o yidei, o avdo. So that the loveh, when he borrows from a Jew, he will send back to him the mashkon through a nachri. Ve'hamalveh yikabel mashkenotav b'yad nachri. The Jew will accept the mashkon from the non-Jew. V'itayna ma'ot, right? And he will give the money, l'nachri, o afilu l'Israel. Right? Then he'll give back the money, so depending on what you say here, either that the malveh is sending the money back to the loveh, or the nusach acher on the side here is liftot ha-mashkonot l'nachri, o afilu l'Israel, and when he goes to buy back the mashkon, he'll send it through l'nachri Israel. Ach shiomar ha-malveh, ani me'alveh l'cha, so malveh l'cha b'shvil l'nachri. The lender will say, I'm lending to you because of this nachri that got involved in the middle. And the malveh will not rely on the loveh at all, rather on the collateral that he's getting. And the loveh is eliminated from the mashkon. If it's lost, he has no din with the malveh. Because he accepted from the nachri. Right, so in this case, what is Rabbeinu Tam suggesting? That if you get involved in a case where you get a Nachri involved in the middle, and the Nachri involved in the middle will be the, in a sense, almost the guarantor of the loan by taking a mashkon from the loveh and passing it on to the malveh. Now the malveh will have no recourse against the loveh because, aside from the mashkon that he received, because he's actually taking it from the Nachri and not having, does not have a relationship with the debtor anymore. And the debtor will have no claim against the mashkon if it was lost by the malveh, and so forth. Why? Because the loveh has no relationship with the malveh again. The only thing the malveh can collect from is from the mashkon and not with the loveh. So Rabbeinu Tam creates this scenario or case where a Jew can lend to another Jew with interest by putting a nachri in the middle and using a mashkon as a buffer, meaning that the mashkon will be a buffer because the malveh and loveh will have no relationship aside from the nachri and this mashkon that's in the middle. And that's how he creates a case where you could lend with interest without being involved with Jew lend with interest but having Nachri in the middle. Mutar, he says in the Yisrael Liot Arev, Bishvu Nachri, a Jew could be an Arev, a guarantor for Nachri, like we saw in our Gemara, the Yisrael Amalved, Lo Batar Arva Azil, Lo Batar Lo Azil. And so then, a Jew can be an Arev for another Jew who's a Malved, because we said in our Gemara, in the Jewish din, the Jew will not go after the Arev first, but rather go after the Nachri. So he goes after the Nachri first, then the Arev is always okay, because when he goes after the Arev, he's after him for the full amount, including the accrued interest, and that'll be fine for the Jew, because he won't be paying interest to the personal Jew. The last thing I point out here is that there's actually a Girsun on Gemara, which actually has Nafkaminot, is that by a Katan, it says, we read in our Gemara, it's read Midrabanani, that Midrabanani should have his Chia, the Gishinau Gisrot is, and the Tosfos of the Tavot says that it's not Midrabanani, it says, without this din derabanan, it's not a din derabanan. Right, so that the din here is not a din derabanan, but rather miikar din, mi din deraisa, you have a din in zchia. Although our Gersa and Agumar reads mi derabanan, which seems to parallel with the cases brought by the Katan, which is a din derabanan, that over here, that it would only be an application of din derabanan. Okay, we'll stop there.